So this morning, we're just really delighted to have Emily Williamson with us from Reach. And she's going to, oh, she's got the screen sharing going already. So
got it already, Bill.
All right. I really wanted Emily to present, and she quickly said yes when So Paul and I talked with her, that she'd done a remarkable job in a relatively short period of time getting Reach Siem Reap up and running. I've been there 3 or 4 times now, and I've had a couple of meetings with the team. Love the team and the energy of what's going on. And you struggled getting started right through COVID and survived all of that. But we really wanted to hear from you about fundraising. And the first thought was, you do an amazing big fundraiser with a bicycle program, and we wanted to hear about that. And then you volunteered, well, why didn't you just talk about fundraising strategy for Reach and the bike event? I'm sure will be one significant portion of that. So we all talk about fundraising from time to time. We share information, and we're very much looking forward to hearing from you, Emily. So with that introduction, the screen is yours, the floor is yours, and thank you
for having me. And I was really honored to be asked to come and speak. I'm really excited for the Q&A at the end, because I'm sure I can learn from lots of other people in the room too, because I know we all do it very differently. I think the reason when you asked me to talk about bike rides and I flipped it back on you and said, well, can I talk about everything, is because the one thing we learned straight off the bat is that you can't rely on one fundraising event. And that's what COVID taught us. So our bike rides is one thing, but it's definitely can't be everything. So I'd prefer to kind of take everyone through what we do and a few tips that I feel are really important to be able to fundraise. But yeah, I'll start off by introducing where we began. So I registered Reach in Australia in 2019, in about Q2 2019 in Australia, and then in Cambodia shortly after. I spent a good 6 to 7 months creating a 5-year business plan with planned 8 programs. So there was a lot of time invested before opening the gates in planning every program that was going to operate and what we thought was going to be our fundraising strategy at the time. We established a board in Australia for accountability purposes. So I'm Australian. So the majority of the funds at the beginning were going to come through Australia. So we've got set up our tax deductibility there and have a volunteer board of directors in Australia. Then we set up our board in Cambodia for the local NGO and for due diligence purposes here. And then a really important part of what we did at the beginning, which has been really key to being able to get through everything, is we set up an international advisory board. And that is just a group of volunteer advisors that sit above both the Australian and Cambodian board to give quarterly advice on strategy. And they have also, especially in the recent years, become really active in helping us fundraise. So not only do they give advice when it comes to strategic operations, they also help with fundraising. This has been really key for me, because prior to running Reach, I'd never even managed anybody. So having a group of advisors, I'd never managed one person. So having a group of business professionals and advisors to help me has been key to being able to know where to go and what to start. So after a lot of planning, we hired 15 team members. And in January of 2020, we did our recruitment. We worked with local authorities. We found the families. And on March 3rd, we opened our gates. So that's a photo of our school probably in January 2020, or maybe, okay, I'm exaggerating, maybe November 2019, when we were putting in the first 4 classrooms and our first office spaces. And we opened our gates on March the 3rd, only to be closed 3 days later. So I know everyone had challenges in COVID. We'd just opened and we'd just made a huge commitment to more than 100 families and 15 new team members. I told everyone, this is the plan. We're going to educate the kids. We're going to have a team. We're going to do this. We'll do that. And then everything got turned on its head. So I was really, really scared. We had, I think, 4 international volunteers on site that got repatriated to their home countries. And we had a first year operating budget. We'd had the seed funding to open for, I think I had maybe 2.5 months running costs in the bank. So when this happened, I was a pretty big nervous wreck. The first thing was to get the volunteers home. And then to sit the team down and explain they're not losing their jobs. That was the immediate thing. And then we didn't really have time to worry. I had to work on a plan. So the reason I had the confidence to even open Reach in the first place is that in my previous NGO where I'd worked in fundraising, I'd established long distance charity rides where international supporters would come from around the world and cycle with me from Sihanoukville to Siem Reap. And that's a 650 kilometer event. And I was very fortunate to have my friends and family help to set that up. So when I left my previous NGO, they were all saying, when can we do the next bike ride? So I'd already had 11 people signed up for the event and kind of knew that that would raise, because it's $5,000 a head, that would raise close to our entire operating budget for the first year. So that is why I had the confidence. Didn't have any other funding or any other things guaranteed. And it completely turned on its head the minute COVID hit and the borders closed. So as mentioned, our initial challenges were the 2021 ride cancellation, because I'd put all the eggs kind of in one basket, which is what I've learned you should never do. And the borders closed and we didn't have the ability to operate as planned. In many ways, when it comes to operations, we actually diverted all of our efforts and adapted everything to become emergency relief and give out food to the families. In many ways, having that year where we weren't operating as planned actually helped us set everything up, because we had the team of 15 team members working on all of our curriculum, what we were going to do. We had a beautiful amount of time together to develop everything. But we didn't have a bike ride, which was the biggest concern. So I'd said to the team and the kids, we will continue operating. We're not going to stop and wait for COVID to pass. We're going to keep going. We had to reinvent people's job roles. But I'd made that commitment to them. So to keep that commitment to them, we needed to raise at least $100,000. So it was very nerve-wracking. But what we decided to do was to reinvent our charity bike rides. What was originally for international supporters, we turned into an event for the kids. So the 11 people that in early 2020 had already registered for the 2021 bike ride, they kindly donated their tour deposits, and the tour provider very kindly then gave us their old mountain bikes that they were offloading because they were closing down their operations. And we decided to make a cycling club for the vulnerable youth. So I was, as everyone I'm sure was during COVID in that first year when we weren't allowed to operate, I was getting really frustrated. And so was the team, knowing that so much was open and everyone was out and about with masks on, but we weren't able to run the school. So we looked into it and we knew that you could have 15 people in an open air space legally. So we kind of just went with that and we started getting our 15 youth that were in the most desperate situations. Some of them were working illegally. We had them come out and we just started riding bicycles with them. And we didn't really expect it to turn into the event that it was going to turn into, but we ended up, to clear our heads firstly, we started just cycling with these vulnerable youth every single day. We were going out 10Ks, 20Ks, eventually 70Ks on a Thursday out to round Tonle Sap and just cycling as far as we could with these teenagers. We had them volunteering at Reach and getting snacks. We weren't really allowed to serve meals, but we ended up making it an experience for the youth. And then we shared this all across our social media and told all of our supporters what those kind charity riders had donated. And we established the Reach Riders Club. So we decided instead, because the people that wanted to help us could no longer reach the country, we decided to make it a virtual event. I know lots of charities do this, the virtual running overseas and doing everything online. So we went down that path, but we wanted to make it as personal as possible. So we encouraged our global supporters to sponsor the youth in Cambodia to cover the costs of the event. And that covered their merchandise so that they could have a branded cycling gear. It covered their camping, overnight camping, the bicycle mechanics, everything that we required for the event, a lot of food. And the sponsors covered that and then had the challenge of fundraising $500 Australian on their students' behalf. Beyond that, they could also choose to compete over 2 weeks in their home country. So our kids or youth do 200 kilometres in 2 days, but our international supporters, to make it more accessible, can do 200Ks over 2 weeks, cycling, running, walking. My uncle walked it. He said he'll never do that again. It nearly killed him, but there's all different ways you can do it. Really luckily, on our first year, we got 81 people involved. I think That's our first year was the biggest year we had of it. And that's because of the disaster that unfolded and the story that came of how much we tried. We had to run the event and we nearly had to cancel it, but all the preparation, but then the restrictions got tougher. So I remember thinking, oh my goodness, I think they'd limited a gathering to 18 people. And that was probably 3 weeks before we were set to ride with the 30 youth. And so we had to run the event over 3 weekends. So I had to do 200 Ks in 2 days, 3 weekends in a row. And we had to run the event 3 times so that all the kids could get to go on it. So it was really challenging, but we managed to do it. And even on the last event, I remember a few of us, that adults that were doing it, we were trying to cheer just as much for the kids, but we were really tired by the third one. But we didn't let the restrictions stop us. And I think because of that, sharing that story with the supporters, they felt even more sorry for us. So they wanted to get involved even more. So that's how we invented the side-by-side ride. And really importantly, because everyone set up with a fundraising page, it helps raise a lot of awareness about what we're doing. And there was also a beautiful local element of businesses getting involved as well in CM Reap. Where we are now, so I'll skip forward 3 years later, we have grown a lot quicker than we planned. So that five-year business plan that I'd written back in 2019, I'd hoped that we'd have all of our buildings by the five-year mark. We were very, very fortunate that a philanthropist I met through a mutual friend found out about our cause and actually helped to establish all of our buildings in the first year. That was really a lot of chance and luck. But that person always turns to me and says, I might have helped with buildings, but I've given you a really big operating budget much faster than you'd planned as well. And that's something that we are really, we're stuck with that challenge now. It's amazing because we now have 34 team members in Cambodia. I think about 12 permanent volunteers overseas. We have 281 students from more than 140 families that we're serving, and we operate 12 programs for them. We're not adding any more programs. This is our vision. This is what we want to do. We've jumped to it much quicker than planned. So we have an enormous pressure now on fundraising. Luckily, we were able to have our inaugural charity bike ride in January this year. So we had 32 individuals from around the world, a lot of UK-based supporters and Australians, and then a little bit of a mix of people that came across and did the 650 kilometres. This is Seng Heng. There's one of our local team members with her hands up because she won the scholarship to participate. Marty, who's in the room right now, also, you did the 650Ks, didn't you, Marty?
Yes, what? I did.
How was it?
Oh, it was great. It was challenging, but I was so lucky that I was prepared and then everything went very well and very great experience.
Yeah, we were really, what we did, we were lucky enough to be able to offer a scholarship for our team members to join, and that's key to our shared experiences. But part of the scholarship benefits is that during work hours, they can train for the ride. So about 3 or 4 months, because we couldn't have had Marty untrained on that event. She did a side-by-side ride untrained once and it didn't work out too well, did it, Marty?
Yes, of course. It's almost killed me, especially my leg doesn't work. Did not listen to me.
Yeah, when Marty didn't train for side-by-side rides, she wasn't supposed to be on it 1 year, but then a sponsor said, I'll donate $500 to Reach if you do it. And that sponsor gave her 3 days notice. And bless her, she didn't want to let Reach down. So she came on the 200-kilometer ride with zero training, and our team all suffered as a result because she didn't want to get in the van and give up. And that's really noble of her, but she also didn't want to pedal. So that resulted in a lot of our team members having to cycle and push her almost the whole 200 kilometers. So we said that couldn't happen on the long distance ride. So Marty did a lot of training and she was amazing. So we've got our next ride set for January 2024 and we have 8 key fundraising initiatives in motion. So I just would like to take everyone through what they are. And I've given a few percentages around what fundraising streams raise what. So I've given our 2022 statistics. So in 2022, we had 7 different ways people could get involved. The first was volunteering. You'll see that that's only got not even 1% of our income comes from volunteer fees. Our volunteer fees are more of a vetting and screening process. And that 1% does help go towards our volunteer coordinator's salary, but our volunteering is kind of more of a capped approach to volunteering. We don't try and have too many. It's more about adding value to the team and helping develop the program. So we don't have a lot of volunteers. We have our Running Cost Club, which is our recurring giving strategy, where people can give a minimum of 20 Australian. So I think about 13, 15 US dollars a month is our minimum entry amount into that club. And we have Save a Seat, which is just a tangible way of telling someone to give 150 US. We'll save a seat for a child, and it gives them that tangible impact that they've put a kid through our education program for a year, for the education program. And then we have fundraising pages. So this is when individuals have set up their own campaigns with the support of our communications team that brought in 2.6% last year. Our charity challenges, so the side-by-side ride and ride to reach. And then we have our match grant campaign, which we do in the middle of the year as well. And then our one-off donations was about 15.35%. Some of these in 2022 were grants, but we put them in the one-off donation category. And then the remaining 12% of funds were restricted. So we do accept restricted donations, but only if it's something that we're interested in. We're quite strict with that. We do encourage people to contribute to what we do, but the restricted funds are anything to do with buildings, anything that's not operational. So that the reason we had about 12% in 2022 was mostly for construction purposes. We were realizing in 2022 that we couldn't rely solely on the match grant campaign and charity challenges. So to further diversify our fundraising, we've added program sponsorship to something that we're looking for. So now that we've established our 12 programs, we're really looking to find partners fund individual programs for a minimum of a year. But in 2023, we've managed to get three of our smaller programs sponsored, and from two different companies. So they're all the things we do. And our goal with our fundraising and our communications team is to create experiences. So whether it's through the charity rides, which is not for everybody, I can tell you, it's only for particular types of people. It's also through our campaigns and one-off donations. We communicate a lot. So what you see on our social media is just one small part of that. The back end of how much we communicate with donors is quite a lot, which I'll go through on the next slide. We're really passionate about building a global community. So as you know, Bill, I met up with you quite quickly when I connected with you on LinkedIn, but I've also been really keen to meet established NGOs and people that have helped me on the ground, people that know what they're doing. I was new to the whole thing. So that's really been key. And I didn't realize I did that from an operational goal. I tried to link with NGOs and established businesses to learn, but through those learnings came fundraising opportunities, because I've realized the more you collaborate and the more you make friends, the more those people refer sponsors and donors your way. So it's been really building a global community is our main goal, and creating experiences for our donors that other charities don't engage with them. I've kind of put our key aspects of this strategy into four areas. The main one is sharing everything. Annual reports and transparency has been key. So having financial audited reports and having open books, so our larger donors have seen down to every single expense line if they want, and that's something that I strongly believe in. We have a closed Facebook group for our Running Cost Club members. We host webinars, so we do a lot of presentations. After our two major campaigns, we host those webinars to catch up with our major supporters. We're lucky enough to have digital marketing partners who help us with our website, but we've got a lot of content on our website. Everything's available and we update it regularly. The one that falls on my shoulders with the help of an advisor is our monthly and financial reports. So every month we do a report on the financials against our budget, and then we do a quarterly report which does all the activities. And I give that to the board, and I'll host a once a quarter update to the advisory board on everything. And that's been key, because the advisory board have been a main reason we've been able to brave the storm and get riders on and get people supporting us. Our advisory board members really recruit sponsors for us. We will once a month do a post that tells a story and might redirect them to a monthly contribution, but we really try and not ask supporters. we focus most of our communications on sharing updates, because I feel that if you share the positive impact, people want to support. So you don't, I think asking too much can be counterproductive. Then thanking our donors. As I mentioned earlier, every donor, even $5, $10, $20, $1,000, $2,000, everyone gets an email no matter what, and it is personal. Our Running Cost Club members and our program sponsors get quarterly reports, and program sponsors have the ability to call on our team for a webinar with their employees at any time. As I mentioned as well, the collaboration, seek as much advice as possible. And I think I'll be doing this not just in my first few years, but for the rest of our careers. The team's been taught to do this, to ask professionals for support. Welcome training. So Bill's been already, I think, twice to reach and done some training with the team. We really welcome training, and that then also helps get people connected in other ways. And partner with great organizations. So a lot of our programs and what we've done are thanks to established NGOs sharing their resources. So I'm a passionate believer that if we all want to do good, we can do more doing it together. Our team are amazing. So this is just my slide to thank them, even though they're not in the room, but they are amazing. They work very, very hard. So this is our communications team. We have Penny, who does volunteer management, content creation, and social media, and Tadiwa, who does copywriting, donor relations, proposal and grant writing. And these are just me. That's just me summarizing their job description. That is not true. They do a lot more than all of that. And they work together, and they help to run all of the campaigns. And then we've got Kim, our local photographer. His job 90% of the time is going out, videoing, and taking photos of everything we're doing. And he does program support as well. So when needed, he will help with admin and things for the programs. And that then helps him get ideas on what posts. He contributes to what we're going to post about, because he's the one that goes out to the excursions and is in the field all the time telling the stories back to Penny and to Tadiwa. We are drowning in work. I'm supposed to just lead strategy, but I'm also creating content. I'm trying my best not to, but we're going to start recruiting for a local communications assistant as well, because even though it's costing us money, I know it will come back. It is a good return on investment in this department. So we really need to increase our team, because we can't keep up with the amount of comms that we are trying to continue with. My main tips for how we manage to do all of that content with such a small team is systems. I'm a real nerd for systems and how you run programs. Without these three things, I don't think we would come close. So in my previous role, didn't have any of this set up where I used to work, and I used to just run around taking all the photos, doing everything myself, and not having clear information given to me. So it made it really difficult to have the content to fundraise. So I think Ponhiri Lee Foundation encouraged me when we first started in the pandemic to use a program called Asana, which is a program management system. And that's what we run. It's free. So this is the best thing about it. It's free up until 15 users per team, but you can work your way around it. We use this for all of our work. All of our internal communications is through Asana. And that's how all of our local program managers like Marty lead her team. And it's fantastic because you can have template tasks and everything. All of your processes can be mapped out, and it's really easy to collaborate. So often when a program leader is talking about something that I think the comms team should share about, I'll just tag them in that thread and they'll be able to get all of the information of what's happened. We use OneDrive for file sharing, and that really helps. And then this is the main point for fundraising. I'm so glad we did, because there's no way we would have been able to keep up with our donors. For the first year, we did everything on a spreadsheet in terms of every time a donation came in, we'd put the name down, how much they donated, where they were from. That manual entry was enough to make someone want to quit their job is the first problem with it. But the second problem is that there was no way for us to know who people were when they donate from afar. So, and that is key. This is the main thing. Kim, the photographer's whole job is done on an iPhone. So I've used a big DSLR before, and I break it very quickly in Cambodia because of the humidity. So I don't know if other people break DSLRs or if that's just me, but I did. And also it takes a long time to transfer between the camera and the computer. So our hack and biggest advice for comms is using an iPhone. We got a secondhand good quality iPhone from iServices for $350. And we have a Mac. Luckily, we had a few MacBooks donated. But every single day that Kim takes photos, he drops all those photos into an organized folder. And so whenever I'm overseas, I can literally go into that folder and see all the activities that have happened in every program for the week. And it's constant. And so that's Kim's main role. And because of that, whenever the social media posts need to go out or someone needs to give a donor an update via email, the comms team, Tadira and Penny, have full access to regularly updated and beautiful photos. So Kim's job, that as a standalone job, I really recommend organizations having something like that because it's been incredible. Even Marty, I know she's got the family enrollments, the new families coming in on Sunday, and she's gone straight to the photography folders to work out how to add things to her slides. Like the whole team uses it as well. So it's really, really helpful. And the main thing as well is we meet every single Monday. We have a leadership meeting where every program manager shares what they're up to. And the comms team sit in on that and they hear everything. So if they didn't have those meetings, they wouldn't know what to post about or what's going on in the organization. And for me personally, delegating is key. So making sure having clear boundaries between whose job role is what, I think is really important to not spread each of us thin. Like Tadiwa focuses on grants. So Penny keeps the volunteers. We need to make sure we don't cross over too much or we get too burnt out. I know, Bill, you did ask me to focus on fundraising events, and have I gone over my time? I've got one more slide, so I'll try and go through it quickly, but the key to the...
You're doing fine.
Okay, sorry. Fundraising events, because I know you specifically asked about it. They are a lot of work, especially the long, actually both of the rides. They're a lot of work. So if you're thinking of doing them well, you've got to be prepared to spend a lot of time doing it. And that's the main takeaway. I think it's if you want them people to sign up year and year again, you need to have clear website pages and obviously the ability for people to have fundraising pages set up. You need to have the complementing social media campaign. And I think social media is really key for us. If we didn't have good social media and people following along all year, I don't think we could get people engaged on social media for one campaign. So having a strong foundation for that's really important. Then the extra work behind the scenes that people don't see is we make information packs for everything. So every single fundraising strategy you see, there's an information pack that explains to someone how to get involved. We have pre-event webinars and calls. We also have a closed Facebook group. So we have a side-by-side ride closed Facebook group and a Ride to Reach closed Facebook group. So anyone that signed up to either of those sees at least 3 or 4 posts a week from the team. They see our kids' bike rides on Strava. It's a lot of different platforms and engagement. We have videography and image packs given to everybody. We try and get volunteers to help us with press releases. We recently got, today we got one of our youth story in the UK Cycling Plus magazine. So we're about to get that delivered to Cambodia and he's going to feel like a celebrity, which is really exciting. Support with advocacy and recruitment. So anyone that says, how can I help? We ask them, can you get people onto our events? We really actively ask people to recruit for us. And then when it comes to the big event, the personalization of that is quite detailed. Three stages of the ride, a Reach team member who got the scholarship who was nominated for that stands up and gives a speech about their personal experiences. We have several videos throughout the event. There's a lot of sharing about what we do throughout the event. Planning, teamwork, and a lot of work. I think thankfully we've got a really dynamic team that are happy. As part of our work culture, we've all learned you have a job role, but we all get in and help in other areas when needed. So when it comes to our side-by-side event, the Reach team all get involved. And it actually ends up being a really fun team building event. But those shared experiences between the riders and our local team are key. I know for Dan, having Marty and Seng Heng on the ride and a lot of the riders getting to know our local team was key to them wanting to come back and sign up again. So our current challenges now is obviously the budget's almost tripled in 3 years, and I don't want that going any higher. There's not enough hours in the day, so I work 6.5-7 days a week, and I have been for the last 2 years, and it's not really sustainable. So more team members is going to be helpful. The Australian dollar is really weak right now, and because of the economy worldwide, we're struggling with the fundraising, but thankfully our advisory board really helped fill some gaps with recruitment, and without them we wouldn't have hit our targets this year. And then for the next steps, currently considering travel, for me to start traveling overseas to start meeting people, because that's what a lot of the program sponsors and people encourage, because not every supporter can come to Cambodia. But the downside of that is it costs money. Flight prices are really expensive. So we're trying to navigate now. We could try something, but hopefully we'll get that money back in donations. So we're about to start looking into international travel as well. And that's it. Does anyone have any questions or tips?
Well, Emily, that's an awesome presentation. You packed an awful lot into that, and you even spoke quickly to get it all.
I'm sorry.
No, that's very good. Why don't you stop the screen sharing now, so that I can put everybody up on my screen and get the whole gallery up there. Gosh, we're 29 people. You drew a crowd, and now I can see the faces, and it's a good opportunity. I'm sure there's some questions after all of that information shared. So we're open for questions. If somebody wants to raise their hand, either really, are you raising your hand, Lita, or are you just fixing your hair?
Yes, I'm fixing my hair, but thank you for question.
But you're going to ask a question anyway. I knew.
Yeah. I would like to take these opportunities. So thank you very much, Emily, for a great presentation. And this is what I'm looking for, and I'm trying to learn currently. So I got a question regarding to the webinar that you said you do a regular webinar for donor attraction. Is that correct? And what is the process of doing it? Okay. Maybe you share with that.
Yeah. Sure. So with the webinar, it's actually not as easy to get people to your webinar as you think. So we've done them 3 or 4 times now. And last year, we only had 3 people show up, but we got all of our reach team to join. But of those 3 people was a very important donor. So we still think it's worth it. But our recent webinar, we got quite a lot of supporters. So what we do, because we have our 2 big events every year, one in June and one in January, it's very consistent. And we do it in June and January so that we have cash coming in throughout both parts of the year. Mm-hmm. But we have a mailing list for everyone that gives to those campaigns. And so everyone that donated or was involved and received a thank you email from our comms team, they also get a mail out, an invitation to the webinar to learn more from the team. So our social media campaign teaches the general public what we want to share. And then inside our webinar, we share more, like a more personal story. We even have one of our youths do an English speech. We don't give children's names or anything like that, but we have the local team share, one of our students share, and it's a nice way for the close supporters to see the team. The challenge is making sure you choose the correct time because of UK and Australia or all around the world. You can't. Yes, you need to work out your most important country of donors and make sure they can attend.
Yes. So mostly the international people or people from Cambodia join the webinars in your experience?
Both. Okay. So we invite all of our donors, all of our local partners, and all of our international supporters. So we get a big mix. There's a lot of Khmer in the room. And also the webinar, we don't just have one speaker. We normally have 4 or 5. So different members of the team.
Yes. So thank you. May I have one more question? I saw the collaborate. You are talking about asking an advice. is that we asking advice from our donors or collaborator from the company about what is our organization doing or something else? What is your mention?
A bit of both, but mostly established organizations. But I think because established NGOs or successful business people, I'm very lucky that I had some retired business professionals help me quite closely. But from the NGO support, I had some established NGO founders give me advice, but not a lot of their time was spent. I'm talking a half an hour coffee where I learned one small piece of advice and then I went and researched it myself and worked out how to implement it. Because I think the hard thing is people that are successful are very busy. So it's finding that small windows with people. And then also if I think through collaboration, there needs to be either a shared goal or maybe a way that, like, I know we've got JWOC in the room. JWOC students come and intern at Reach. So there's got to be shared support to work out ways to work together.
Yes, I agree with that. Because I used to catch some advice from Bill and Bosipa and then research it by myself. What is or does it mean? Something like that. Because I know they are busy. Yeah. So thank you very much, Emily. Yeah.
Nice questions, Lita. And Doc Reed from Pepe has got his hand up. What question do you have for Emily?
Yeah, I have two questions. Hi, Emily. I think hi. I met you once when I was a speaker at Reach. Great experience to talk to the students.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I hope I can do it again because I have a lot of something to share to the students.
Excellent. I'll make a note.
Anyway, after listening to your presentation and looking at your presentation, I love the slideshow. And I know that Reach has a really great branding. And I can see that you also have experience in business background. So I would like to ask if you have a person working on branding, and also another question is how important the branding is in NGO sector, because a lot of business and companies would focus on branding, but not NGO. But I could see that your branding is very amazing and look kind of attractive.
Thank you very much. I studied marketing and communications and branding, and it's me doing the graphics. So I'm a control freak with it. Sorry to my team. They know that very much. We're working with Kim on building graphic design skills, but that is me. And I'm really, that's what I love to do. And I don't have enough time to do it very well, but that's why we have basic branding and templates and we use Canva. But I think it is so important. So I think the most important thing for fundraising successfully is how you run everything as a business. And if you can't run things as a business and have smooth processes, like we use Canva to make sure all the templates so I don't have to make every graphic, but we set things up in a way. But I think it's very, very important, and consistency with branding and fundraising and everything you do so that your supporters know who you are and that those messages that you're giving are consistent.
Do you have a Cambodian fundraising team?
Kim is in the team.
Yeah.
Kim is in the team, and we're about to add one more. We're going to start recruiting for a local fundraising communications team member as well.
Excellent, excellent. We've got HHA, Chen Ten has got her hand up.
Hi.
Oh, there you are.
That was such a great presentation.
Thank you.
Hi. So my question would be, like, what is your experience in engaging the local people in your fundraising campaigns or events? Because, like, I'm really new to fundraising as well, and just hearing about your experience, I want to know, like, what your tips were, or just, like, what did you go through in that regard, and how were you able to gain the support and engage them, making it, like, you know, involving them in the whole process?
So we're really with the side by side ride is really the only campaign that we really involve the local community. Like our local team join our long distance ride, but the event is that the local one is a side by side campaign. Local fundraising, we've not raised a lot locally. So we've had one or two locals on the side by side event, which was a highlight. But our community engagement strategy is that Tadiwa and the comms team actually went out to the local NGOs. We send emails, we go out to businesses. The Muffin Man is one example. He really kindly donated muffins for our kids, and we do a bit of promotions of local businesses. At the moment, our fundraising strategy is not in country, it's overseas. But we, because of how much work goes into these campaigns, we're hoping maybe in a few more years, once our students graduate and are old enough to fundraise independently when they're on university scholarships, we might extend their responsibility to them. But our comms team's too busy engaging our international donors to do too much in country.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
What do you suggest, like, the level of importance that should be put in local fundraising? Like, do you think that it's an important, like, strategy to try to involve with the locals, or, like, depending on needs, like, reaching out to...
Sorry, go on.
Oh, that was all.
I think it depends what organization you work for and who the current network is and where the funds have come from to begin with, because it's a lot easier to get donations from existing donors than it is to get donations from new donors. So depending on what the fundraising strategy has been, I can't really speak for local fundraising because it's not been a major part of our fundraising. So I'm not sure in that area. I've not had experience. But at the moment, because we've got success with people from overseas, and I'm international, and now we've got a few international team members, that's where we're focusing. And thanks to the internet, overseas supporters are very accessible because of social media. So I think the most important thing is good storytelling on social media and constant communication.
Yeah, I asked that question because here we are working to kind of reevaluate our fundraising strategy. So kind of like the right diversifying the places where we get our donations from. So that is something that we are considering for our organization. So just want to see what other people's experiences are in that regard. But thank you. Thank you.
Oh. That's all right. I think the thing that the most important thing that's helped us with the boring stuff, it's our systems. Our systems and our programs and our back end. If we don't have that organized, we would not be able to, the comms team wouldn't be able to share the stories.
Well, that's good questions, good response. We've got a newcomer here with his hand up from First Step Cambodia, an organization I haven't personally visited yet, but very much looking forward to in October. Janvesna, maybe you just introduce yourself to the group. Welcome, and we'd love to hear your question.
Thanks, Bill. I would like to introduce myself. My name is Janvesna Chin. I'm the development manager for First Step Cambodia. And I just started with First Step Cambodia just a month ago, just less than a month. And thank you, Emily, for the presentation and for the great sharing of your fundraising strategies. This is something like we have thought of for a long time, but probably I think that many local NGOs are also facing a problem with, with receiving the a small donation from individual, for example, like, I think there are many, many generous people in the globe, would like to donate $5, $10, $20. But for local NGO that, we don't have any connection with the, to opening a bank account overseas, which the donation or the supporter, like they can just spend 2 minutes to to send out the money. Like, okay, I have credit card. I just like scratch it, or I go to the online and then I type my credit card numbers and then I type like $10 and it can be a monthly and a recurrent donation, something like that. Yeah, this is one of the challenge that we were trying to look for, like what kind of, and I also need your idea or advice, how could in a local NGO open a bank account that you know, we can receive a small donation easily? And I believe that the supporter may not willing to donate $10, but they have to pay $50 for the bank charge.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think especially overseas supporters, like I can speak for Australians, if it's not a registered Australian charity and it doesn't get them tax deductibility, even though it's $10, they're going to most likely give to a different charity. So to do it well and to get those donations, I think you need to either partner with an existing Australian or American or UK or other country, a Canadian charity, to get them to process donations on your behalf, which comes with a fee usually, but not too bad. It's better than having no portal. But we're really lucky because we have a digital marketing agency as a partner. And so our entire website's been built for free and they pay for all of our website costs. So we are incredibly lucky. But the internet and the amount of platforms and programs that become available, we're about to change our whole website now to a platform called Raisely, which I'll drop into the chat. And I know that can connect through Stripe to any bank account. But you need to be a registered charity in their list of countries. But if you don't have the connection and to another charity or people in Australia or the country that you're looking to fundraise in set one up for you, I still think you'll miss the donations because people look for tax deductions on their donations.
Mm-hmm.
Emily, I'll jump in here for a moment. And our Southeast Asia Foundation is a registered charity in America. And we have people who want to give to, for example, RIT at PTD in Battambang and to HHA and to Build Your Future Today, Americans. They can get their tax deduction by sending the donation to us, and we're quite happy to forward it on as directed. So we've mentioned that before, but it's always worth repeating because sometimes they have to be said two or three times before the message gets there. But for anyone that has got, I was going to say substantial, but let's just say any U.S. donors that want to send them money, it's pretty easy to donate into our. We can take it with wire transfers. I can take checks. I can take credit cards. I can take Venmo. The money will come to us, and we don't charge anything for the service. We actually pass 100% on. And somebody's mentioned Give to Asia, and I'm going to speak to that in just a moment. We're available for that. Give to Asia is another possibility. They're a very large NGO in San Francisco, providing donor services to 25 countries in Asia. I sat on that board for 8 years. And I'm now ex officio board member. I met with the chairman of the board of Give to Asia just last Thursday night. We had dinner together. So I'm very familiar with how they operate. They're very good. They're very respectable. And they also charge fees. They significant fees. They do self-directed funds. They do donor-advised funds called Friends Funds. They're a good resource. They're a good resource. We're also available to help you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bill. Yeah, I think I hope I can get in touch with you when you are back in October. So yeah. Let me know.
And it's not hard to find me if you don't already have it. So Paul has my email address, and you're welcome to tee up any questions in advance that you want to talk about when I show up. And also just your benefit and for the others in the room. So Paul does a wonderful job of managing my schedule. So the best way to get some time with me when I'm there from 6 October through 19 October, and it's probably a third to a half booked already with all of the Rotary things I'm doing in addition to the foundation activities. But just get a hold of So Paul, and I'd love to be on your calendar as well as have you on mine. Who asked the question about Give to Asia? It popped up on like a chat. Who will you speak up? Who raised that?
It's me. Yeah, me.
You raised the Give to Asia.
No, yeah. I used to join with Give to Asia. I think over 10 years ago when I worked for an organization, a child protection organization called the End Child Prostitution, Abuse and Trafficking in Cambodia, ECPAT Cambodia. So I joined with Give to Asia. Yeah, ECPAT. Yeah, and now I moved a little bit, like 10 years that I moved out from this organization to join an education sector. Now I moved back to a child protection sector. But I tried to contact Give to Asia. So I searched their website, and then I searched the contact, and then I text them, give my telephone number and email, but they haven't replied for like 3 or 4 days.
Well, that's a shame. One other thing I should say about Give to Asia is they don't have a lot of their own money to direct to different causes. For the most part, Give to Asia will work with donors, whether they're private citizens or whether they're corporations, and some very big names that do a lot of stuff for Johnson & Johnson and for Starbucks and other names that you would recognize. And Starbucks will say, well, we want to get $40,000 over to this project for this particular need, and Give to Asia will do the due diligence on the recipient and make sure that money is going to be properly used and make sure of the transfer. But they're not distributing their own money. They're distributing donors' money. In the case of Southeast Asia Foundation, we raise money every year, which for the most part is unrestricted. So when it comes to Cambodia, so Paul and I talk through the various requests that we've received, and we use some of our unrestricted money to fulfill those grant requests. But in addition, we can also work with one of your donors, for example, who said, I want to get this money directly to First Step Cambodia. And once have vetted you, and once we're comfortable that that you're legit and that you're using the money wisely, then I will agree to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, we already do that with two or three organizations in Thailand and a similar number in Cambodia. And it's pretty easy for me to keep track of what goes where and get it to the right place.
Okay, good. And thank you, Bill.
We think that's important enough that we don't take a fee for it.
Yeah.
And I've got a very friendly bank who is very generous with me about wire transfer fees as well. What other questions do we have for Emily? This was a fascinating presentation. Makara, you've just raised your hand. Always good to hear from you. What's on your mind? You'll need to unmute first, Makara. You're muted. Now you're unmuted. Now you're muted again. Now you're unmuted. I need to hear your voice. Makara may be having some.
It might be internet.
I think maybe we're having some internet connection problem. Makarak, are you hearing me okay?
Hearing
okay. Darn, Makara, I think you're hearing me, but we're having trouble hearing you. And your picture seems to be freezing up. Try turning off your video and see if that helps with the audio portion. Now try to speak.
Do you hear me well? Do you hear me well?
Now I hear you.
Okay. Okay, I have one question for Emily. Hello, Emily. I'm from AB Season, right? You might have heard about that. After listening to your presentation, very good and interesting. The question is that how do you keep that beautiful strategy working for long term?
I think with the systems. I know I keep coming back to systems, but with really good program management tools and training and onboarding for new team members, because of course, well, our beautiful teams actually, our fundraising team are committed for quite long term, but of course, if they are to leave at one stage, which everyone goes on to new jobs, I think having really clear systems and structure in place and having the help of volunteers. So being open, if you open with everything and you have your volunteers help in these areas, Penny does a really good job of getting the volunteers right into it when they come over. But yeah, I think for long term, you really do need to have one person that is making sure the strategy is shared and communicated regularly. At the moment, that person is me, and it will be me for the next 5-10 years. So it's difficult, but if you have I think it really does come down to having support from a board, systems in place, and one person driving it for a long time.
I just wanted to pitch in. You mentioned you use Salesforce, which is a big ticket CRM system, customer or donor relationship management system. This has come up in conversation for reaching back to a workshop I did about fueling your NGO. We had Mark Desmali speaking about it when he talked about systems. That we still have a number of people in this room, a number of these people who are still using Excel spreadsheets and don't have a good effective donor management system. Some of the organizations have so few donors, they get their money from one or two big ticket sponsors overseas someplace. Maybe that's not an issue for them, but you might just reinforce the benefit of a system that,
oh my goodness,
with the care and feeding. I call it the care and feeding of donors.
And the amazing thing is about Salesforce, because I'm a real nerd when it comes to all these things, because it really is a crutch for our whole entire team. If someone donates and the person who's in charge of contacting them doesn't have a clue, how do we know 1,000 people and remember their wife's name or where they're from and all of these things? It's impossible. It's really hard with the spreadsheet to know when they last donated as well. You can't. So I think the amazing thing about Salesforce is that it's free for nonprofits. So the system is free. I'm not sure if that's for registered Cambodian. I did it through our Australian charity, but it probably is. It's free for nonprofits. We had to spend maybe $2,500 on a developer, but because we have a clear idea of our fundraising strategies and the ways to get involved, now that it has been set up, we haven't paid a cent in 2 years.
I know Salesforce is a big ticket item, and I didn't know that it was free for nonprofits. I will look into that in America to see.
And the even more exciting, Bill, they've got artificial. So our first developer, I'm so into Salesforce that we're about to develop it for our operations as well. So our programs are about to, all of our beneficiary data, everything we do is about to get built onto Salesforce, which is a much bigger project. But there's this new nonprofit we're working with in Australia that are actually guiding us with volunteers on how to set it up ourselves through training modules. And there's artificial intelligence apparently that you can plug in as an app on Salesforce that will scan everything and it will tell you who's at risk of dropping out, who you should contact. It tells you everything.
Oh my God.
So there's all of the technology's incredible. And if you connect with enough people that know what they're doing, you can have tricks up your sleeve that make robots do half the job for you, which is just something that everyone, I think artificial intelligence, I forgot to put in the slide, but we're using it with all of our content as well now. It's really helpful. So.
Yeah, I got a hold of ChatGPT a couple of weeks ago and put a couple of bucks on my credit card so that I could have access to it. And I said, write me an article about why it's important to educate girls in Cambodia.
Yeah.
And it started to flow down the page. And within 30 seconds, I had a 2-page article. And damn, it was good.
It's extraordinary.
It covered all the points about marrying later and having fewer children and better respect in the family and more job opportunities and helping the village. I didn't feed any of that into it. I just said, write me an article. And you know, I'd give it an 8.5 in terms of its English ability. It's perfect English. There were no mistakes in it. It's just that I would edit it. But damn.
Have you got Bard in America, the Google version?
Yeah.
B-A-R-D.
Yeah.
That's what I'm using.
I haven't used that one yet. I'll make a note.
And we don't use it. We can't use it for social media posts and things that are personal about our cause, but we can use it to give basis or skeletons for blogs. And just it's very helpful when you have to regurgitate the same emails and same thank yous. If you can then, our info packs that we write for the events, we don't like to give the same info pack out each year. So we can put that content into the AI and say, rewrite this in a new tone, adding this point, and that just rewrites your content for you. It's great. Yep. It's great.
I think we're just venturing into that. I'm just venturing into it. But I was really impressed. And I've got a to-do list. I'm going to go back in and say, write me a letter, write me an article about why it's important to educate girls in Thailand and see whether it gives me anything different or whether it's a regurgitation of the same article. Yeah. But so far, so good. Emily, this has been a wonderful conversation with you, your presentation and the conversation after. You mentioned at one point that you liked my words, not yours, but networking and learning from other organizations. And you really underscored the spirit of this group, this Cambodian leadership learning community, that we just all get better, smarter, faster when we work together and share information. Over the years now, time does fly by pretty quickly, but so it has been years and some of the original participants in this, probably back in 18 or 19, I don't remember. So Paul, when did we get this whole thing going? 2017 or 18, somewhere in there.
17, like when the...
2017 might have been our first workshop. So you reinforced a lot of the values of the group, and it was a wonderful presentation and much appreciated. We all say thank you to you.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for giving me the chance to speak and meet everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I'm going to touch the record button.